الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ابي القاسم المصطفى محمد
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد
وعلى اهل بيته الاطيبين الانجبين بهم نتولى ومن اعدائهم نتبرأ الى الله اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا جملة مؤمنين والمؤمنات کے لیے سب مرحومین کے لیے مخصوصاً جنہوں نے درخواست کی ہے اور جو اسپانسرز ہیں تبرک کے آج کے اور کل کے ان سب کے لیے ایک فاتحہ بسم اللہ الرحمن الرحیم زیارات جو نفل ہوئی ہیں معصومین علیہ السلام کے لیے سب سے زیادہ زیارات ابا عبداللہ الحسین کے لیے نفل ہوئی ہیں اگر آپ دیکھیں تو 80 سے زیادہ زیارات ابا عبداللہ الحسین کے لیے ہیں اور دوسرے معصومین کے لیے اتنے نہیں حتیٰ امام رضا کے لیے نہیں نہ رسول خدا کے لیے اتنے ہیں نہ امیر المومنین کے لیے سب سے زیادہ امام کے لیے یعنی مختلف مناسبتوں میں مخصوص زیارات وارد ہوئی ہیں اور اگر آپ کو وقت ملے ایک زیارت ہے زیارت الناحیۃ المقدسہ جو کہ امام عصر جل اللہ تعالی فرجہ الشریف سے منقول ہے کہ جس میں امام زمانہ نے مصائب کربلا بیان کیے ہیں اردو ترجمہ بھی موجود ہے اس کا انگلش میں بھی موجود ہے اور پھر آپ خود ہی دیکھیں گے امام کس طرح مصائب یہاں پر بیان کرتے ہیں کربلا کے وہاں پر ایک جملہ ہے فرماتے ہیں کہ لَأَنْدُبَنَّ لَكَ صَبَاحًا وَمَسَاءً وَلَأَبْكِيَنَّ لَكَ بَدَلَ الدُّمُوعِ دَمًا کہ میں یعنی امام فرماتے ہیں ہمارے بارہویں امام فرماتے ہیں خطاب امام حسین علیہ السلام سے فرماتے ہیں کہ میں صبح و شام آپ پر گریہ کرتا ہوں یعنی ہر روز صبح اور شام اور فرماتے ہیں کہ صرف گریہ بھی ایسے ہی صرف رونا نہیں ہے بلکہ اشک کے بدلے میں میں خون بہاتا ہوں اور کل بھی یہاں پر ذکر ہوا تھا کہ شیخ رجب علی خیاط جب پہلی مرتبہ وہ رسول خدا کی خدمت میں پہنچے مکاشفے کے ذریعے تو وہاں پر رسول خدا کو خواب میں دیکھا تو فرماتے ہیں کہ کوئی راستہ ہے کہ میں اپنے امام کی خدمت میں پہنچوں تو رسول اللہ فرماتے ہیں کہ دن میں دو مرتبہ حسین پر رو وہ بھی یہی دستور ہے جو کہ زیارت میں ہمیں ملتا ہے کہ لَأَنْدُبَنَّكَ صَبَاحًا وَمَسَاءً وَلَأَبْكِيَنَّ لَكَ بَدَلَ الدُّمُوعِ دَمًا کہ صبح و شام گریہ کرو یا اگر آپ سیرے علماء اگر دیکھیں جو اہمیت زیارات پر دیا کرتے تھے یا اسی عزائے حسینی پر دیا کرتے تھے یہ بھی عجیب ہے مرحوم آیت اللہ العظمیٰ شیخ عبد الکریم حائری جو کہ مؤسس حوزہ علمیہ قم ہیں ان کا یہ سلسلہ تھا کہ ہر روز درس میں درس سے پہلے مصائب پڑھا کرتے تھے ہر روز تو طلاب جو آتے تھے درس میں انہوں نے اعتراض کیا یہ تو بات نہیں ہوئی کہ ہم لوگ آتے ہیں پڑھنے کے لیے اور ہر روز پہلے مصائب سننے ہوتے ہیں پھر جواب میں وہ کہتے ہیں کہ جو کچھ بھی میرے پاس ہے وہ ابا عبداللہ الحسین سے ہی ہے پھر کہتے ہیں کہ اپنی داستان سنائی انہوں نے کہ جب وہ کافی بیمار تھے اور پھر یعنی تقریباً موت ہی کے عالم میں تھے اور جو اطراف تھے ان کے انہوں نے بھی ان کو قبلہ رخ کر دیا چادر بھی اڑا دی ان کے اوپر کہتے ہیں کہ دیکھا کہ میں نے میری جان جو ہے لینے کے لیے فرشتے آئے ہیں اور پھر میں متوسل ہوا ابا عبداللہ الحسین سے اور کہنے لگا ان سے کہ میں نے اس دنیا میں کچھ بھی نہیں کیا، توفیق دیجئے اگر عمر دوبارہ ہو تو میں کچھ خدمت کر سکوں. تو وہاں پر جو فرشتے ان کی روح قبض کرنے آتے ہیں کہتے ہیں کہ چھوڑ دو، یہاں پر ابا عبداللہ الحسین نے وساطت کی ہے، وہ شفیع ہوئے ہیں، ان کو جو ہے دوبارہ حیات دے دی جائے. اور پھر جب دوبارہ حیات ملی ان کو، اس کے بعد یہ حوض علمیہ قم کی تاسیس ہوئی، اس کی بنیاد رکھی، اور آج اگر آپ دیکھتے ہیں کہ ساری دنیا میں اس 50-60 سال کے اندر جہاں پر بھی خدمات انجام دے رہے ہیں سب اسی ایک شخص کی، اور وہاں پر بھی ابا عبداللہ الحسین کا ہاتھ ہے. تو اور ہمیں بھی یہی دستور دیا جاتا ہے کہ اگر ہم چاہتے ہیں کہ خدا سے قریب ہوں، دروازہ حسین کا ہے، سفینۃ الحسین اوسع و اسرع، کہ سفینۃ الحسین، حسین کی کشتی جو ہے وسیع بھی ہے اور سریع بھی ہے، فاسٹ بھی ہے، اور ہمیں اپنے مقصد تک جو ہے بہت جلدی پہنچا دیتی ہے. There is an ayah in Quran which says that قُلِ اَعْمَلُوا فَسَيَّرَ اللَّهُ عَمَلُكُمْ وَرَسُولُهُ وَالْمُؤْمِنُونَ that do as you wish, do as you please, whatever you want to do. Allah is watching you, Rasul is watching you, and also some of the mu'mineen, they are watching you. As if there is a connection from here to them, from here to Allah, from here to Rasulullah, and everything is live before them. And in those things which do play a very important part in a spiritual uplift of an individual is crying on Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. A majlis that is held, a gathering that is held wherein people sit and mourn for Aba Abdullah, that majlis, it's a great asset. Although we may not be knowing about it now, in a report from our sixth Imam, he says that we have a beautiful religion, but the beauty of this religion will be seen only, and then he points that at his neck. And then he says that when a person dies, only then will he understand what a benevolent religion he had. And the benevolence of this religion will be seen only when he enters the hereafter. What we see, what we have been told, what has been mentioned to us, it's just a gloomy picture of what we will see in the hereafter. It's much more, and that cannot be defined. An Imam says that, do as you wish. Allah says, do as you wish. Allah is watching you. Rasul is watching you. Some of the mu'mineen are watching you. If you look into the seerah of Ma'sumin, Qais, he is the representative of Aba Abdullah al-Hussein, who was sent to Kufa twice during his lifetime. He comes, he has a message to deliver to Kufa, and when he finds that the political environment situation is so that if this message of Aba Abdullah is delivered, it's going to be a mess. It will work out against the Imam. He rips it, he swallows the message. People of Ibn Ziyad, they come and arrest him and they take him to Ibn Ziyad. He says, what was in that message? And why did you rip it? In reply, he says that I did not want that pure message of Aba Abdullah to get into your najis hands. That's why I ripped it. Says, who were mentioned in it? Says, that will not be disclosed. That was something between Aba Abdullah and him, and he does not reveal. He says, you know what the consequences are. Quran says the severe and the most severe punishment which Fir'aun had was لَأُقَتَّعَنَّ أَيْدِيَكُمْ وَأَرْجُلَكُمْ مِنْ خِلَافٍ, that we will slice your hands, we will cut your hand and your legs, and the opposite, that if it's the right hand, then the left leg, or the left hand and the right leg. And then after that, we will behead you. He says, okay, that is the ultimate end of whoever serves. Now, Qais is a young man, about 30 years of age, and then they tempt him with money, with palaces, with houses, with wives, etc. And then they say, we just want one thing to be done, and that is, you go on the minbar, and then you curse Ali and Hussein, and then we will just forgive and waive you, and you will be fine. He says, okay. And in his heart, he says that Imam had written that letter to just four people, And with this opportunity I'm getting, I'll deliver the message to a larger crowd from that member. He accepts. Ascends the pulpit, the member, and starts speaking loud about Ahlul Bayt. He's dragged down the member, and then he is killed. Killed in a very brutal way. The message of Qais being murdered, being killed by Ibn Ziyad, is delivered to Abu Abdullah and Hussein. And it's amazing. The performance of Imam for his representative, who is Qais, an ordinary person. Now, how Ahlul Bayt behave, or how they retaliate, or how they pay back to an individual who has served them in whatever way. Then say the riwayat, they say that Imam, he wept a lot, cried a lot. And then it says that he cried like the Dua Arafah, which he has, which is a lengthy Dua. And when he was reciting that Dua Arafah, how he shook his shoulders and cried and shed tears. He cried like that for Qais. Faces Kufa and then recites Min al-Mu'mineen rijalun sadaku ma ahadullaha alayh. That is an ayah from Quran, that among the Mu'mineen there are some who were steadfast on the agreement, on the covenant that was between them and their Lord, who remained, who were firm on that. Minhum man qada nahbah, some of them passed away. وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ يَنْتَظِرْ, and some of them are still waiting, like himself, like Abul Fazl, so on and so forth. Now the third thing Imam does upon the martyrdom of Qais alaykum salam is that he says, اللَّهُمَّ اجْعَلْ لَنَا, that, O God, make it as such, make it for us, that is Ahlul Bayt. Now again, if you look into Quran, there is an ayah which says that Sawa'un alayhim astaghfarta lahum am lam tastaghfir lahum. A body was brought before Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. And he was said to recite the funeral prayers on that body. Rasulullah, he offers his prayers, and you know that on the after the fourth takbir, you say, Allahumma ghfir lihadha al-mayyit. O God, forgive this mayyit. He says the prayers, and then immediately an ayah is revealed. That sawa'un alayhim astaghfarta lahum am lam tastaghfir lahum. It's all equal, Prophet. Whether you say, God, forgive that person, or whether you don't, he will not be forgiven. But someone where Abu Abdullah al-Hussein mediates, that's a different story. Where Abu Abdullah al-Hussein mediates, the reply is never negative. It's always accepted. And inshallah, if we get some time during these forthcoming nights, inshallah, we will shed some light what the turbat of the dust of the grave of Abdullah Hussein does, what miraculous effects it has, or the prayers under the dome of the grave of Abdullah Hussein, which are always accepted. Inshallah, we will talk on these subjects as well. So Imam, he faces Kufa, then recites this dua, that Allahumma ja'al lana, O God, make it as such for us. Who are these us? It's Ahlul Bayt. When he says that God make it for us, that is he, it's himself, it is Imam al-Mujtaba, it is Amir al-Mu'mineen, it is Rasulullah, it is Hazrat al-Zahra, for the Ahlul Bayt in particular, in all of them. And again, Ahlul Bayt, they play an important part in our lives. And in particular, Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. There is a debate between the father and the son in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Amir al-Mu'mineen is present, and Abu Abdullah, he's a young toddler, but 4 or 5 years of age. There is a debate between the father and the son, that is, Amir al-Mu'mineen and his son, Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Imam starts listing qualities. He lists about 70 qualities for himself. Says that Siddiqul Akbar, aw kaffahu wa kaffay fil adli sawa, that I am the great and the most truthful. And then I am the brother of Rasulullah in this world and the hereafter. Akhi fid dunya wal akhirah. And then he says that Rasulullah said that Aliyun khayrul bashar, Ali is the best among the mankind. or says that in Quran, Bab al-Hitta has been mentioned, and here Rasul says that Ali is the door of the city of knowledge, etc., etc. He lists 70 qualities for himself. And then says, Hussein, this is what Rasulullah has said about me. Now, am I better or you? Then reply, Imam Hussein says that, well, what I possess, you don't possess, father. What I have, you don't have. And then he says, what is that? He says, I have a father, Ali. Do you have? And then I have a mother like Zahra. Do you? You don't. So, in reality, I am better. So, then Imam says that, Allahumma ij'al lana. That, O God, make it as such. Make it for me, for us, Ahlul Bayt. Wali shi'atina. And for all the Shias, for our Shias. Indaka manzilan kariman. That make for us and for our Shias a manzil, a house. Indaka, by you, where you are. Manzilan kariman. Kareem, an exalted position. Now, kareem, if you look into Quran, kareem has been used for the angels. Angels are kareem. Surah Yasin says, angels are kareem. Or if you look into Ziyarat Jamaat al-Kabira, there the A'imma, they have been addressed as kareem. The A'imma are kareem. And someone who is kareem has a very lofty position in the hereafter. Here, Qais passes away, Imam faces Kufa, and says, God make for us and for our Shias a position exalted, lofty, a house, a rank near you. That is, we all should be together. So Imam prays for Qais in that way. So, someone who serves Ahlul Bayt, and in particular Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, he possesses that great rank, and that is the dua which Imam has for them as well. Coming back to our topic which we started yesterday, that is the attitude of servitude, that a person, he possesses an akhlaq, an attitude, wherein he submits wholly and solely. It was mentioned yesterday that we, during our lifetime, we find people who are good at a time, and then they change their position and they end up with a bad end. Or sometimes you find it's the other way around. So what should be done that we don't have that bad end that we have seen from people? So to stay intact, it was mentioned that if we submit, if we possess an attitude, an akhlaq of submission, that whatsoever Allah has said, we accept blindly and we submit without asking why, who, and all these questions or raising doubts. Whatever He has said, just accept blindly. That is submission. And that submission is that perfect rizq, perfect sustenance that Allah has given to us. You have all these other sustenance that has been given to us, like prayers, fasts, du'as, hajj, ziyarat, etc. All that is good, but that is not perfect. Perfect is submission. If someone submits to Allah, then all that will help. If someone does not submit to Allah and just continues with all these other a'mal, they would not help him as much as this submission will help. So, a muwahhid, he must know that the akhlaq of his enemy too. It shouldn't be as such that we know only the beauties or only the positive qualities that have been mentioned. Among the teachings that we have is that we should know who our enemy is. Now, this is something which we find in Quran, that Allah, the teaching given to us is that when you recite Quran, before you say Bismillah, you say A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. That I seek refuge in Allah from the cursed shaitan. That you have to put that shaitan away first, and then you say Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Or, for example, if you look into the Ziyarat Ashura, which is a beautiful Ziyarat, which is a word of Allah, which is Hadithul Qudsi, which was revealed by Allah through Jibreel to Rasulullah. So even that Ziyarat Ashura, it's a beautiful Ziyarat. So the source also, it's Allah Himself. And inshallah, we'll talk on this as well, inshallah, in the forthcoming nights. In that Ziyarat Ashura, after the Ziyarat, you come to the point where you say, Allahumma al'an awwala zalimin zalama haqqa Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. That, oh God, curse those who have the first tyrant who oppressed Muhammad and Ali Muhammad, all of them, the first tyrant, and the last who will oppress them. And then after saying that, you say, Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. First, you curse them, you put them aside, and then you say, Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. That is a teaching. That even in our hearts, we want to purify our hearts, we want to enlighten ourselves. All that trash has to be put aside out first. And then you bring that noor, that light in your heart. We can't have haqq and batil together in the heart. You can't have evil and good together. Evil has to walk away, then good takes its place. So the teaching over here is that we have to know who the enemy is. Among our weakness is that we don't know our enemy. And many a times when we say our enemy, we just go towards shaitan, who is from the jinn, and we just focus on him. We don't see in our livelihood what part this enemy is playing with us in our livelihood. The societies, they are not closed societies like the past. The societies today are open. Whatever we have here in America today, for example, you will find all of this trash in the most remote villages in whatever part of the world from this internet. So the enemy has to be known, who this enemy is. In a report, our sixth Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam says in Usul al-Kafi, the second volume, that inna bani Umayya atlaqu lin-nas ta'lim al-iman وَلَمْ يُطْلِقُوا تَعْلِيمَ الشِّرْكِ لِكَيْ إِذَا حَمَلُوهُمْ عَلَيْهِ لَمْ يَعْرِفُوا. Says that Bani Umayyah, they taught people Iman. They just propagated what Iman is. And then Imam says they never propagated what Shirk is. They said prayer is good, reciting Quran is good, fasting is good. All the good things they promoted, they propagated that Tabligh was there. Shirk, they never. And then Imam says, do you know what the reason for that is? And then says that if they were to promote what shirk is, inform people what shirk was, the first mushrikeen were they themselves. To avoid people from focusing and on Bani Umayyah, and that is what we see even today, throughout the Muslim world, you find prayer, a lot of importance is given to that, fast, a lot of importance to the month of Ramadan, only these parts of it. But what about shirk? Shirk is never known. Shirk is never understood. Why? Because if shirk was understood, that is why Imam says over here, or the teaching given to us, or that attitude of servitude that we have to possess, that we have to submit, we have to know who the enemy is. The enemy, it's shaitan in general, but shaitan, he himself doesn't come to carry out the tasks and affairs. Yes, on occasions which are important occasions, shaitan, he comes himself in person. For example, in the issue of Ghadir, which was an important occasion where Rasulullah appoints Amirul Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib Muhammad as the successor, as the Khalifa. Now, because that occasion, the event was an important event, there Iblis, he comes in person, he attends to see what's happening, and then to make up the conspiracies or to plan for the future what should be done. And again, if you look into the history, that is about 2.5 months after Ghadir, that is when Rasulullah passes away on the 28th of Safar, Amirul Mu'mineen was burying Rasulullah. And when he had covered the grave, I believe Abadar or Salman, they come to him. And they say that Saqifa, it was an amazing meeting over there. And we saw someone, an old man, looked very pious. And we never saw him before. He was crying, weeping the most, and he was the first one who extended his bayat and allegiance to Abu Bakr. And Amir al-Mu'minin says, do you know who he was? He says, no, I never saw him. He said, that was Shaitan, Iblis himself. He came there because the event was an important event, so he had to be there in person. In certain events, he doesn't come himself. It's like what we have, the formalities in countries where the head of the state has to attend a certain meeting. For example, the UN, the head of the state comes, he has to attend himself. In other meetings, it's not the head of the state, it could be any minister, or sometimes on a lower level, it's any ambassador of the state, he could come. But on occasions that are important, it's that head who has to come. So because Ghadir was an important event, because Saqifah was an important event, Shaitan, he comes there in person so that he could plan for the future. So we have to be smart, we have to be careful that what Shaitan does in our life. Now many a times you find that there is this hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib. He says that the worst of sins is that sin which you say that it's small, it's tiny. Amir al-Mu'mineen says that's the greatest sin. Never say that that is small, that is tiny. Those small and those tinies are the greatest sins, and that will end up into huge sins. Now Shaitan, when he wants to deviate someone, he never comes and says that that's fire, just jump into it. He will never do that. He will create that charm and beauties in a way that a person ends up in that fire. That is what we see in Quran. Quran says that when he comes and speaks to Adam and Hawa, he doesn't say that God has forbidden from that tree, so don't go there. He comes and says, وَقَاسَمَهُمَا إِنِّي لَكُمَا لَمِنَ النَّاصِحِينَ, that I have an advice for you, a nasihat. What is that nasihat? Come and consume the fruit from that tree. Now, Shaitan, he comes with an advice. Now, even in our livelihood, all these things, charms, beauties that we have, or lack of ihtiyat, lack of precaution, many a times it's from Shaitan. For example, an easy example, it's all these consumables that we have, eatables that we have. Now, although the ruling will be, you can eat it if you have a doubt in it, or for example, gelatin, you can use it, etc., etc. Now, all these are stepping stones. If we don't use it, if we don't eat that gelatin, we won't die. But Shaitan, he comes in a way, in a beautiful way, so that gradually things, they become lawful for you. Now that they become lawful, the next step will be that haram. That also, he will twist it in a way that also becomes halal. So we have to be careful, we have to be smart, that if you don't eat gelatin, nothing would happen. We don't, although the ruling from the mujtahideen might be something else, but the person who asks a mujtahid also, many a times you find Shaitan hidden in that. Yeah. There is something hidden in that, and there is that conspiracy hidden in that, although he will not reveal it. It's exactly the same what we see over here. وَقَاسَهُمَا, that Shaitan says to Adam, that I am giving you a humble advice, that I'm giving you a nasiha. And elsewhere says that وَلَأُزَيِّنَنَّ لَهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَأُغُيَنَّهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ, that I will make things for you beautiful in this earth. And then gradually he brings man in a way and throws him into that fire. Shaitan in Amir al-Mu'mineen in Hizb al-Aghas says that he never sleeps, he never slumbers, he never rests. He is constantly working hard. Constantly working hard. Now if he rested, if he relaxed, or he took a day off, then we would be at ease. He never takes a day off. So we have to be smart that this enemy who is so smart, who works so hard, we have to protect ourselves. That is what our sixth Imam says over here, that Bani Umayyah, they taught people all about deen and iman, they never taught them what shirk is. So we have to know what this shirk is. Among our Asatid, Marhum Ayatullah Ishtihardi, who passed away this last Rajab, he used to say, reporting from Ayatullah al-Uzma Marashi, among the great ulama Maraji Taqlid of our Shia world, who passes away in the mid-90s, Now this great alim, every day when he comes out of his house, he says, God, by the presence of the 14 ma'sumeen, bring me back with iman when I come home for lunch. That is, it is so tough. The tactics, the conspiracies, and the temptations of shaitan are so tough that he never leaves anyone behind. No matter how pious a person would be, shaitan is always there. Now, if you look into, now, when I said that we have to be, or now, all this is a lesson to myself first, that our performance should be as such that we shouldn't cross the boundaries of ihtiyat, of precaution. There has to be a precaution boundary which could protect us. Like the hadith we have, which says that if you want to protect your wajib prayers, protect them with nawafil. If you have nawafil, they would act like a shock absorber and they would protect your wajib prayers. But if you just do wajib, then it's more at risk that you might lose that wajib as well. So to protect that wajib prayers, do a bit of nawafil. So we, if we want our performance, whatever that performance is, to be safe, we should have a boundary of ihtiyat all around it. If that ihtiyat is there, then we would be safe up to a certain extent. And that is good. We must do it. Now, me, myself first. Now, I'll give you two examples from the seerah of Ma'asumeen again, then you could judge for yourself. For example, the wealth that we have, the money that we have, khums is wajib, we have to pay that khums. Now, does khums make every money halal, every money tahir? That's not the case. Many a times, God forbid, it's said that you can use lotto with a good intention and then you can give it for a cause, for example, or take the khums out of it and then it becomes tahir. It doesn't become tahir. It never becomes tahir. During the time of our 11th Imam, Askari alayhi salatu wassalam, he appoints a representative, Ahmad bin Ishaq, who is his representative in Qum. And once in a while, he travels all the way from Qum to Samarra, to the Imam, to deliver the money that has been collected from Mu'mineen as khums, as zakawat, or the other funds. Or if they have questions, people in Qum from Iran, he goes to the Imam to get answers for them, what we have today as istiftaat. Now he says that he traveled 4-5 times all the way to Iran. And then in one of his last trips, in his fourth trip, because the fifth trip he passed away, in his fourth trip, he says to the Imam that, is it possible for me, or will I see the Hujjat after you? Imam says, you want to see him? He's here. And then calls his son, Imam al-Asr, says, Mahdi. He comes in. Says, this is the Hujjat, 5 years of age at that time. And then he says that this is the Imam after me, although he will not be living to see him. And then he says that the bundle, these parcels that have come from Iran, can you check them? And then Imam checks all these funds that have arrived and then says, this is halal, this is najis, this is impure. And just a little bit out of all those funds that were collected by Ahmad bin Ishaq was accepted and all of the others were just turned back. So, khums doesn't make everything tahir, doesn't make every money clean, pure. It has to be, it's an ibadat, it's a worship. Now many a times you say that you can have that haram income, pay a khums out of it, and then you can make a mosque. How can that be possible? Quran says, At-tayyibatu lit-tayyibin, good is for good. Mosque is a place of worship. How can you make it with a contaminated wealth? With dirt, it's not possible. It has to be clean in every aspect. It has to be pure. Every brick of that has to be clean. A mosque, if it is built and it becomes najis, it is wajib aini, wajib fauri, that you have to clean it immediately, that if any type of najasat gets into that mosque. Now, can you build a mosque with najasat? Thing which is impure. Or for example, during the time of our seventh Imam Kazim alayhi salatu wassalam, and it was a time where fake imams, fake a'imma also had popped up quite a lot. Now people, they were confused that which is the right imam, which is not. And then people from Ahwaz, they appoint someone with all the funds and then with these istifta'at to go to the imam. And then what they say is that you take the money, if he is the imam, barhaq, the righteous imam, then he would know what is right and what is wrong, I mean. And again, these istifta'at, these questions that we have, we will seal them. And when you come to the imam, if he is the true imam, he will respond to those questions without breaking the seal. And once you get the answers from him, you break the seal in front of the imam and see if the answers are given over there, it means that he is the true imam. Now this was what the people had arranged with their representative to be sent to the imam. Now, when he was about to depart to Medina, an old lady, Shatite, her name is Shatite Yeneshaburi, she comes and she says that this 1 riyal is my khums money, if you could give that to the imam. The representative says that just 1 riyal, oh, I take only that little, it's a bit embarrassing to take that small amount of money to be delivered to imam. She says, please take it. That's what I had saved, and that is the amount that I have to pay to the imam. He takes all that money, including that 1 riyal of Shatide Nishaburi, to the imam. Imam accepts only that 1 riyal and turns back everything else. And then says to this representative that I've answered the questions. Now, before he could say anything to the imam, he says that I've answered the questions. You can break the seal and open and see if check. Now, he just admitted that it is the true imam. Now, this lady, she was a pious, sincere lady who had submitted wholly, solely to whatever the teachings of the imam were. And she had a pure livelihood, meaning that whatever was haram was put aside, whatever was halal was in her livelihood. And then it so happens that when Shatite, she passes away, Imam comes all the way from Nishapur to Ahwaz to perform the funeral services. His personal shroud was given to her. He leads the prayers on that marhuma and she is laid to rest. So Ma'sumin, the ayah that was said, that pure are for the pure. At-tayyibatu lit-tayyibin wat-tayyibuna lit-tayyibat. Good for good, pure for pure. So if we have that boundary of precaution and ihtiyat in our livelihood, that way that good also can enter. And if that ihtiyat is not there, and if the livelihood of an individual, may that be housewise, or may that be income-wise, money-wise, whatever, if it is contaminated in any way, that good which is imam, he cannot enter that. Because imam is all pure. He is, if you look into this book that was mentioned yesterday during in the biography of Marhum Sheikh Rajab Ali Khayyat, it so happens that once he was offering his prayers, age was 25. And then when he said, Assalamu alayka ayyuhan nabiyyu wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, he sees the Prophet. Not like us who just say Assalamu alayka ayyuhan nabi as if it is from the other side of the world. He was saying that Assalamu alayka ayyuhan nabi and the Prophet was in the presence of the Prophet. And then he says, the Rasulullah says to him, why are you so late? Why have you come so late to us? That is, they are waiting. They are there, but we have to get to them. And to get to them, that purity is required. And that purity is that purity in every aspect, in all aspects. And then in his halat, it is mentioned that every night he has a ziyarat for ma'zumin, and it's unlike our ziyarat, it's just a word of mouth. When he recites ziyarat as if he is in the presence of ma'zumin, sending their salutations to them. So we have to be careful, very careful, that shaitan, his tactics, his conspiracies in our life, in our livelihood, the role he is playing, we have to know who this shaitan is, what he is doing with us. There are certain things that, or for example, the concept of Dajjal that we have. Dajjal is a being who will come in the end of time. Reports that we have for Dajjal, 90% of them have been reported from the Sunni sources. Only 10% of them are from our sources. And the definition of Dajjal that we find in most of the ahadith is a definition that if you look into it, then you would say that this can never exist and can never come. An existence, a being with one eye in the forehead, consuming such a large amount of food, etc., etc. Now, that monster would never come. When the interpretation of Dajjal, it's all these different systems, all these different conspiracies, all these different charms and beauties which drag you in a beautiful way and end in that pit, in that fire. That is Dajjal. All that system which leads us to indecency. So, the first sin that was committed on this planet or in the creation of Allah was the sin that was committed by shaitan. And that is kibr. That is, Allah said, bow, he says no. And then he says that I will worship a worshipping no one ever worshipped from among the angels or the prophets. Allah says, I want to be worshipped as I say, not as you please, as you wish. That submission has to be there. If you look into the riwayat or the teachings that we have, says that there are three things that end up, that have that bad end. The first thing is takabbur, that is pride. Pride in every aspect. It could be anyway. We start our prayers saying Allahu Akbar, we end it with Allahu Akbar. That means that pride belongs only to Allah. Allah is great. Or in Dua Joshan Kabir, wal kibriya urida'u. Kibriya is that pride. Rida means that platen, aba. Says kibriya is that cloak or that platen or the aba, which belongs only to Allah and to no one else. So someone, if he possesses pride, then he is on that edge of destruction. Takabbur, shaitan, possessed first. And then hasad. Hasad is jealousy. Jealousy. And that jealousy was that first sin that was committed by Habil, killing his brother. Qabil, who killed his brother Habil. And then, again, the third sin, it's hirs, greed. Again, greed is something, with the first greed that was done, that was by Prophet Adam, that greed made him taste that fruit which Allah had forbade him. And as a result of that, he was punished. So these three things, we should be careful, they don't exist in us. Takabbur, pride, greed, hirs, and then again jealousy. Again, many a times we may find in ourselves these things may pop up, that you find that you are great, or I find that I am great. The moment we find that, that is the danger point, that is the danger zone. We have to correct ourselves immediately. And the teaching to us is that whenever these doubts pop up into our minds, you have to get to that specialist to clear those doubts. Don't let these doubts stay in you for long, because gradually they will become cancerous and they will ruin. So the moment that doubt pops up into us, get it cleared quickly. I'll again mention another example of how it works. Ayatullah Haj Jamal Gulpaygani, he is among the ulama of the 50s, who passes away in the 50s. And he is in the study circle of Ayatullah al-Uzma Burujerdi. And he says that, now Ayatullah Burujerdi stayed in Qom, Jamal Gulpaygani, he stayed in Najaf. Says that it so happens that he was reciting the ziyarat of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu was salam. He was reciting the ziyarat, and all of a sudden he has this feeling, or he, as if he is bestowing sustenance to every creature in this world. So, as if he is giving that rizq to everyone, or a task which is done by God, he sees that he is doing that task himself. If it was you and me, we would have been misled. We would have said that, no, we are great, that's something that we are doing. How it happens is that Allah, He possesses all that beauty, that jamal, that kamal. And sometimes you find that a reflection of Allah, of his existence, is seen in a mirror. And the mirror thinks that He is God. So we also act in that way, that a reflection of Allah is seen in us, and instead of we admitting that it is the reflection of God, we say it's something, the mirror starts thinking that that is God. So we, who are the mirror, start thinking that these abilities are ours. So he was smart. He starts crying. Says, Ya Ali, do something. What's wrong with me? I shouldn't have that sensation, that feeling that I am the provider and this sustenance is being provided to everyone from me, through me. I am not that. Goes straight to his ustad and says, do something. What do I do? That is what is being seen in me. That is the sensation I have, that I am providing everything to everyone. He says, go to Amir al-Mu'mineen. A few days pass, he goes to Amir al-Mu'mineen, cries, weeps, sheds tears, nothing happens. And then he is said, and it is a fact, that in issues relating to diseases, to shifa, to cure, may that be cure in a human body, or may that be cure in the spiritual side of us, the door to that, it's Musa ibn Ja'far Bab al-Hawaij alayhi salatu wassalam. That is Qadimain. Says that go to the Imam, he will find a solution for you. Now he, with that feeling that has come into him, goes straight to Qadimain, and it was winter, they had rolled the rugs, and he puts his face onto those cold marble slabs and starts crying. Says, Imam, do something. I want this disease that I've been afflicted with to be taken away from me. I can't handle it. The moment he gets up, that has been taken away and he is granted cure and shifa, and that feeling and sensation that he is the provider of the entire creation was taken away from him. So he was smart. He was smart. The moment he was hit with that turbulence, he finds a solution, cries, weeps, and then gets a cure. And then comes back to Amir al-Mu'mineen, and at this stage, now these things, they come up during the lifetime of individuals, and they are tests, exams from Allah. That he wants to test an individual, inshallah, we'll talk on this issue, might be tomorrow or day after tomorrow, that these tests and exams that come through our throughout our life, they are for an uplift or they are for a decline and a downfall. If we are smart enough, if we took that opportunity as a good opportunity, that elevation is there. Otherwise, the destruction is there. So he passed that test, and this time when he comes to the ziyarat of Amir al-Mu'mineen, there is another download of ma'arif in him, that he finds that he is the most wretched servant of Allah. And then he comes out of the shrine and then puts his head onto the wall to settle down. It's like when a big heavy file you download, then you need to restart the computer so that that file settles good in your machine. Again, no, he never revealed what exactly was given to him. That's how Allah acts. He tests in a way, and if you pass that test, an abundance is given to an individual. And it was given to him as well. So we have to be careful. For example, we have these different du'as, inshallah, if we get some time, that also would be mentioned. And as-salamu. We have to submit. wholly, solely to Allah, and that is that attitude, that akhlaq of ubudiyat, which a person should be possessing. And among the best servants of Allah, or who submitted to Allah in that benevolent way, is Amirul Mu'mineen. When it comes to worship, his worship is second to none. When it comes to crying, weeping, when it comes to servitude, when it comes to service, when it comes to providing services to the community, again, that is amazing. And again, if it's mentioned that when he was the Khalifa of Mu'mineen, of Muslimin, and the first person of Islam at that time, he comes and provides food himself to the houses of all these widows and all these orphans. And when these orphans start crying, and Amirul Mu'mineen, he plays with them, he converts with them, and when they say that we want a ride, we want a horse to play with, if he gives them a stick to play, they say no. Then he himself, he bows down, he crawls on the floor so that the orphans, they sit on Amirul Mu'mineen and could play with him. So that servitude, that is how Amirul Mu'mineen, he submits in every aspect. For that lofty position is given to him as well. In a report from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, says that the latch of the door of the paradise, it's made of gold. It's in halaqat al-jannah min yaqutiyat al-hamra, it's made of rubies, red rubies. Ala safayah zahab. And then when you, in the olden days, nowadays you've got a bell. In the olden days you had these huge big doors, and on the door you have a latch. If you want to notify that you are at the door, you bang that latch, it gives a sound and they know that someone is at the door. Says that the paradise, it has a door. Now all these are formalities, otherwise a paradise, a door is not needed. Someone who is there enters it. Says that paradise, it has a door, and that latch is made of rubies red. And there's a plate of gold on that door. And then says that whenever that latch is hit on that golden plate, do you know what that ringtone is? Rasulullah says, it's Ya Ali, Ya Ali, Ya Ali, Ya Ali. Allama Tabatabai, the author of Tafsir al-Mizan, he was inquired that why does the paradise need a door, and does it need a doorbell? And then he says that after all, when you go somewhere and you ring the doorbell, it's for the owner to inform him that I'm at the door. The owner of the paradise is Amir al-Mu'mineen. So that should be like that. So, submission. A person has to submit wholly, solely to Allah, tabaraka wa ta'ala, in every aspect. May that be akhlaq, may that be worship, may that be servitude, may that be service, may that be wife, children, serving them, etc., etc. That total submission has to be there. Now this submission we see in Karbala as well. Now as Amirul Mu'mineen submits to Allah, and the loyalty which he shows to his brother Rasulullah, the same thing is seen in Karbala, that Abul Fazl al-Abbas, this son of Amir al-Mu'mineen, he submits to the Imam of time, which is Aba Abdullah. And the loyalty which he possesses, again, that is second to none, amazing. And then, when Hazrat Zahra salamullah alayha passes away, and Amir al-Mu'mineen, he marries Ummul Baneen, and as a result, the fruit of that marriage is four sons. The eldest is Abul Fazl al-Abbas and three others. Now when she becomes the wife of Amir al-Mu'mineen, she says that I can never take the place of Zahra. She says, I was a servant of hers when she was alive, and I am a servant of her children now. Although she is the wife of Amir al-Mu'mineen, stepmother of his children. She says, I was her servant then, and I will remain a servant of her children even now. And with that caliber and with that attitude of servitude, she raises her sons. And again, on the day of Ashura, you find how she had educated her sons is seen then on the night of Ashura when Abu Abdullah al-Hussein turns off the light and then everyone and says to everyone, leave. No one leaves. Everyone stands and gives a little khutbah, a little sermon. But Abul Fazl al-Abbas, he has nothing to say, no word to utter. Quiet, total submission, as if I am staying, I won't leave. How much Abu Abdullah says? He says no, no word to utter, and cannot leave. I'm here, I'll stay. Silence, a total loyalty, submission which he possesses. Again, this loyalty of Abul Fazl al-Abbas is seen even today. About 150 years ago, during the time of Marhum Ayatullah al-Uzma Sayyid Bahrul Uloom, the custodians of the haram of Abul Fazl al-Abbas, they come and say to him that the basement has flooded. And they come to the basement to see what's happened. Now, this great alim is there, the architects are there, and they go to the basement and they see it's all flooded and water, it's just circling around the grave of Abul Fazl, as if performing a tawaf. And then that architect says that, was it not as such? Is it not that what we find in history, that Abul Fazl, he was of a big build, the height. Now how come the grave is so tiny, so small? And then this Sayyid, he beats his head, starts weeping and crying. And then says that on that day of Ashura, that body of Abul Fazl al-Abbas wasn't a full body. It was just crushed and sliced into pieces and it was laid to rest. And that's why the reason of having this tiny grave over there. And then this loyalty, this submission of Abul Fazl al-Abbas is seen even today. Reporting from this book, Siyahat al-Gharb, written by Marhum Najafi Quchani, says that it was one of these occasions, the Arba'een, and it is a habit that mu'mineen, they travel to Karbala bare feet. And he says that it was a hot day, and I was to join a caravan, and with that caravan to go to the shrine of Abul Fazl al-Abbas and Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Says that because the caravan was departing, was leaving, and I had to take some water, and because I was in a rush, I couldn't take any water. I just joined the caravan and said if I was thirsty, I would ask for some water from some of the members of these caravans. And then he starts the journey bare feet on that hot day to Karbala. And then says that, I was walking and it was hot. I was dehydrated, wanted water, did not get. And all of a sudden I was reminded of the day of Ashura and I find that a clip opens before me and I see it is the day of Ashura, that everyone, there's an ambush over there. Children running from here to there, being attacked, everything burnt down. And I, seeing the horror of that day, ran faster and faster. He says that my feet, they start bleeding. I come to the shrine of Abu Abdullah. I wash my feet, and it's 6 o'clock. And the clock, instead, when it starts striking six, instead of the bell jingling, says, Hal min nasirin yansuruni, Hal min nasirin yansuruni, 6 times. And then he says, I was further amazed to see that the clock in the haram of Abul Fazl al-Abbas, instead of striking and jingling, says, Labbaik, 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 Labbaik. That wafa of Abul Fazl al-Abbas is there even today. And the same was on the day of Ashura, that when he was instructed to get some water for the children, when he comes by the river, someone who is thirsty, who is dehydrated, and all that water in front of him, naturally he would splash a few drops of it in on himself. But he, despite the water is there, he says, my master is thirsty, the children, they are thirsty. How come this Abbas could take? And there, takes the water,
but that water could not reach the household.
Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen wa sayya'lamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun qalabin yanqalibun. Allahumma aghfir lana wa liwalidayna wa liman wajaba lahu haqqun alayna wa liman wassana bid-du'a wa li jami'i ummati Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم عجل في فرج مولانا صاحب الزمان ماتم الحسين.